Having accurate statistics about crimes and other incidents is important, and it's even more important to understand the human cost of the safety and security problems that this industry is not fully acknowledging. This hearing, along with other hearings and inquiries I've made into the cruise industry since I've been chairman, are about one thing, and it's called accountability.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the dawn of America Live?
When it comes to the cruise industry, we've been doing our job. We have held hearings, we have analyzed the data, and we have talked to many different people with experiences in this industry. This oversight has led us to very clearly to the conclusion that we have to act. We need legislation to protect consumers. When an industry opposes even the most basic public disclosure about its conduct, it suggests to me, frankly, that it has something to hide. In spite of the cruise industry's talk about taking responsibility for their passengers, cruise companies sometimes treat their customers with shocking callousness and disregard. My words are harsh because I'm angry about this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Benal of America Audio with your host, Tim Benal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules. And really, after an intro like that, I guess you can say no comparison. I don't know what is going on here on Blog Talk, but they didn't play our fancy intro. Welcome to another edition of BOA Audio, my friends. Very excited about this one. As I was just saying to our guest, when we had him on the show a couple years ago, the episode just blew up, and we got so much feedback to it. People were just absolutely riveted by it. And a lot of people said the same thing over and over again. At first, they were like, "What is a strange topic for a strange show?" I mean, usually we do paranormal stuff, but this was talking about cruise ship safety and all the folks who have been victims of the nefarious cruise ship industry. Really, the negligent cruise ship industry is probably the best way to put it. And it just blew up. And our guests ended up going on coast to coast to talk about this stuff. And in the ensuing 2 years, a lot has happened leading up to this past week in Washington, D.C., a congressional hearing on cruise ship safety. He was really instrumental in getting it all together. And here on BOA Audio to provide us an update on this really kind of breaking story in a lot of ways, get the firsthand scoop on the entire hearing, how it all came together, and what is going on with cruise ship safety. Folks, sit back, relax. This is going to be a riveting addition to the program. Kendall Carver, welcome back to BOA Audio. Thrilled to have you on the show again, my friend.
Well, it's great to be back. And we enjoyed the first one and glad that it got a good response.
Oh, it got an amazing response. Just an absolutely amazing response. People were just, as I keep saying, riveted. It was heartbreaking. It was mystifying, frustrating in a lot of ways. This whole story is crazy. I guess, as I said, it's been 2 years since we talked to you almost to the day. At the risk, I guess, for the folks who haven't heard you before, give us a thumbnail bio background. I hate to do it because we've already had you on the show, and there's so much I want to talk to you about with this congressional hearing, but let's bring the newcomers up to speed. Who is Kendall Carver? Tell us about the International Cruise Victims Association.
Well, just an average guy. I ended up CEO of an insurance company in New York City for 18 years. Raised four daughters in Connecticut. Marion was our oldest daughter, the one that got us involved with this. And it's taken us on a journey, Tim, that I just could never have imagined.
Yeah.
And this next month, it'll be 10 years since Marion disappeared, and she's still being written about in various publications, including the March issue of Popular Mechanics. So it's a story that's just gone on and on and on. So do you want any background of what happened to Marion, or do we need
– you know what? In total respect to you, we've already kind of covered that, and we don't
– Sure.
We want to get into the congressional hearing. I know you do too because
sure.
You were right there front and center. Folks, go and listen to the first time we had Kendall on the show. He tells this whole story. It's heartbreaking. we don't want to. This is sort of an uplifting kind of evening here because of the events of the last week. So let's talk about that. Tell me about this congressional hearing. How did it all come together? And I was trying to figure this out because the last time we had you on was a couple of years ago. There was also a hearing last summer. So there's been a couple of hearings, but this most recent one was just last week. Tell me sort of how the events that led up to all this.
Well, Senator Rockefeller has really figured out the cruise line industry.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2010, Tim, we passed legislation in Congress.
Right.
And there were only four votes against it, which if that legislation had been complied with as anticipated, there'd be no reason to do any more than that. But we found that there was manipulation to the legislation last time. Little words were changed, which significantly changed the intention of the bill. So starting a year ago, Senator Rockefeller held a hearing where he met with the CEO of Royal Caribbean, the CEO of Carnival, and I guess you would say pleaded with them, to get their act together.
Hmm.
And one of the things they said in that hearing a year ago, just one of the things, was that, and they knew that this was going to be an issue, that in the first bill, the intention was that all alleged crimes be reported to the public. In fact, somebody changed seven words, Tim. And I don't know if we talked about this last time or not. But
I think it has to do with open cases, something along those lines. Right?
Yeah, that the FBI, the intention was that all alleged crimes be reported and posted on the Internet by the Coast Guard. In fact, somebody changed the wording to say only those cases that the FBI opens a file on and closes have to be reported. So instead of hundreds of cases, they're reporting like 15 crimes a year.
Right, right, yeah.
It just made it ridiculous. So the intention of this legislation was to correct that. But it's been a much tougher road, Tim. I've got the list. Hundreds of thousands of dollars has been given to congressional members, both in the House and the Senate, to prevent any legislation. And that's clearly made this a more difficult road to travel this time.
Hmm.
We're getting there, but we're not there yet. But as a result of last week, Rockefeller determined to put it through. Now, let me just tell you, we had two bills, one introduced in the House by Representative Matsui, who introduced the first bill, who is a Democrat, and Representative Pohl, who is head of the Victims Caucus and a Republican in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, the nature of the Coast Guard and Marine Committee had radically changed so that they wouldn't even talk about the bill. And without going through that committee, Tim, we were dead in the House.
Yeah.
Absolutely dead. So I, frankly, 2 months ago, I thought we were dead and that we would not pull this off. Well, Senator Rockefeller this is last year, he's chairman of the Commerce Committee, well-respected individual. In fact, I really recommend that people go on our website, which is internationalcruisevictims.org, and in the left-hand corner, you'll see a box that says the 2014 hearing.
Mm.
And they can literally watch the video. And I think maybe, Tim, you watched that video.
Yeah. Let me stop you there because I'll do something kind of unorthodox, but except for the folks listening live. If you're listening on the MP3, stop and go and watch these hearings, folks. They are just... they're really amazing. And at first you think, oh, it's a congressional hearing. I'm not really going to be, this is going to be boring. It's on C-SPAN. But if you've listened to Kendall Carver on this show and you're listening now, you will want to hear these. You want to see these hearings because they are really powerful stuff and give you an amazing look at what's at the current state of this fight, really. I feel kind of energized having seen it. I was excited for the folks who are fighting for this. And I became a big fan of Senator Rockefeller from watching it. I was really impressed that he was getting behind this issue. So, folks, go and watch these because we're going to be talking about them quite a bit here tonight anyway. Because as Kendall said, I watched it last night and I was completely blown away and wrote down tons of notes on it. So I hate to interrupt you there, but where were we on this? So he put this together. This is the Cruise Passenger Protection Act, right? This is the law that he's trying to get passed right now. That's the legislation?
Right. And his intention, because of the partisanship that's taken over Congress. Tim, it's rather sad, but it's just the whole atmosphere in Washington has changed. And here we have an industry pouring tens of thousands of dollars in to representatives to prevent things from happening. And here we have this little group, International Cruise Victims, which has no money, although we're now in 25 countries in the world with volunteers that are working on these issues. But the whole atmosphere changed. So in June, one of the bills that the House had passed and the Senate has to pass is the Coast Guard reapportionment bill. Mm. That funds the Coast Guard. It just has to go through. And Rockefeller in June found that several of his members were not supporting that. Well, they were supporting the Coast Guard bill, but he wanted to place the key provisions of our bill into that Coast Guard bill.
Yes.
So that it had to, if you passed the Coast Guard bill, our bill would pass. And he was having some issues with that in June, about the third week. And so all of a sudden he stopped, and they were going to have a markup on the bill. And he stopped the markup like the last Wednesday of June, I think it was, and said, we're going to hold a hearing, and we're going to have victims. And so that's really how the whole thing started. So during the July, they tried to negotiate with the cruise lines to get them to accept minimal standards, like reporting crimes.
Right.
And having proper medical care. And really nothing that costs anything. And they tried to negotiate with the cruise lines. They wouldn't do it. So a week before the hearing last week, Tim, and we'd been working on this up until that point, he said, we're going to hold a hearing. And I want to bring victims. I've testified 5 times in Congress, Tim. My story has been around. But
exactly.
He wanted 5 or 4 victims who had never testified in the Senate before. So we had a Lori Dishman who was raped. We had a Phil Gerson who was a lawyer in Miami who's actually also chairman of the National Center for Victims of Crime. He just settled a case of a minor that was raped on a cruise ship. Then we had a woman, Amanda Blake, who lost her mother because she wasn't given proper medical care. And then we had a person that was on the Triumph that got stuck at sea for 5 days and they had no toilets, no nothing. So they became the panel showing the horrors that people go through. I mean, the last hearing of the Senate was, you know, the cruise line executives and people like that. Now we've got the actual victims talking that have experienced the horrors. And I think it was an extremely effective tool.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's why I said it feels kind of like a triumph in a way, because it really sort of captured this message that needs to get out there to people of how dangerous these cruise ships are if you're not safe. You know, you really got to be on your guard in these situations, and most people aren't. And I believe one of the people who testified said, I think it was Amanda Butler, she said, you know, they just assumed that the medical care would be top notch. This is a top notch corporation. This is a state of the art cruise ship. Of course, the medical care is going to be, you know, outstanding. Turns out, folks, it's far from outstanding. It's practically criminal, really. And hopefully it will be if this law gets changed. Go ahead.
Yeah, and in the case of Amanda, her mother, who was only 51 years old, she was with her dad and her mother and herself. She just collapsed, probably a heart attack. It took them a long time even to get to her. Then when they went to the emergency area where they had equipment, the place was closed up. They had to open it up. They had to dig the equipment out, the resuscitator out of the closet.
Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, the woman's dying.
Yeah. And to finish that story, folks, you got to watch these hearings. To finish that story, then the poor woman, they resuscitate her, and she's in a comatose state, and the ship promptly kicks her off the ship, kicks her in the coma off the ship with her daughter and her husband to care for her on, I don't even know what island, some place. They just leave her in a foreign country. Her dad and her comatose mom on a stretcher, and they leave, and they go back to the cruise ship. Unbelievable stuff, just absolutely unbelievable stuff. My jaw was on the ground, and I hope, you know, the power brokers who were watching this, I hope they were shaken by this kind of information. I know that was really the goal here, to raise awareness about all this, right?
Absolutely. And in the case of Amanda and her mother, they had to go through customs. Here, the woman is laying there dying, and it was just a horror story. But Tim, if you go to our website, this happens over and over and over.
Mm.
It's just the way they operate, and they just dump them off at the port, get rid of them, and leave them on their own. This woman had to charter a private jet.
Oh, my God.
To fly her to a legitimate hospital in the States and spend a fortune. And, you know, it's one of many sad stories along the way. And that's what keeps us going, Tim, are these horror stories.
Yeah, yeah.
That keep coming. They just don't stop. And yet the cruise lines do not want to change. And one of their arguments, if you go on our website and you look under ICV News, you'll see story after story after story that has been posted. But there's more stories that are being posted. But the cruise line's argument is, well, we're already highly regulated, and we don't want any more regulations. Well, Tim, I got to stop at that point. That is a sham.
Yeah.
When they say they're highly regulated. They're not regulated. That's the whole game that they play. In fact, we put out an ICV update recently and says if you don't want regulation, just say you're highly regulated. And what we're requiring under the bill and Rockefeller is requiring is not regulation. It's just the reporting of crimes.
Right, right.
And,
exactly.
And having medical doctors, just common sense things that you assume are already in place, and yet they're not in place. And the cruise lines just do not want to do anything. Now, Tim, I'm going to move back. I'm going to change the topic a little bit.
Okay.
back to a hearing in March.
All right.
A recent deposition taken by a lawyer in Miami, he shared it with me,
mm-hmm.
has shown that there's been like 3,500 negative media articles on the cruise lines.
Wow.
Day after day, they said, well, the press doesn't really understand this. Let me tell you, Tim, I have worked with a lot of press, and you can't fool them. But anyway, in, I think it was February, I read, it comes out of a travel magazine, Travel Weekly, and they said, gee, there's going to be a hearing of the National Transportation Board on cruise ship safety.
Mm-hmm.
And the announcement's coming from a cruise line magazine. So that raised many issues. So we started going after that, and it turns out, Tim, at the hearing a year ago,
yeah,
the person that represented the cruise lines,
mm-hmm.
was the former head of the National Transportation Safety Board. They'd hired him as a consultant.
Oh, God.
I mean, and so that's how this whole hearing was set up, with the National Transportation Safety Board. So if you go to our website again, on the home page, in the left-hand box, you'll see NSTB for the National Transportation Safety Board. And you can click on that, and you'll find a 51-page report that we wrote. And if you go to the back of it, you'll find correspondence between us and the chairman of the National Transportation Board. I guess you'd say pleading that we'd be on that panel, but they excluded it just to the cruise lines. So here's the guilty party. And they excluded it just to the cruise lines and the flag state of the Bahamas, which does nothing, and the IMO, which does nothing.
Hmm.
So that the purpose of that hearing was to show how highly regulated the cruise industry was. Well, I tell you, Tim, it was a sham.
Hmm.
And when I further explored it, the person they put in charge a year ago, or safety maritime issues at the National Transportation Board, guess where she came from?
Oh, you're going to tell me she came from one of the cruise lines.
Yes, Royal Caribbean.
Oh, my God.
She's been on one of their boards.
The level of dirty tricks involved in this story is astounding. It is astounding, Ken. The dirty tricks involved are insane. Go on. I'm sorry. I'm just blown away. I remember last time we talked, the same thing happened. I'm completely blown away by this story.
Yeah, well, the whole thing was set up so they could come up with a report showing that they're highly regulated. Well, let me talk about that a little bit. The Bahamas register 1,600 ships.
Mm-hmm.
250 are cruise ships. Well, here's this little island with 1,600 ships. You know how many people they have, technical experts, to manage things?
How many?
Six in London.
six in Europe, through yourself.
Yeah, six in London. Well, you couldn't possibly. They're supposed to do annual inspections, all kinds of stuff, and it's just a sham.
My goodness.
Yeah. So when a person gets on a cruise ship, they are not in the United States. They're in the Bahamas, or they're in Panama, or where they flag that ship, which they know will do nothing. And I know this is getting away from the hearing, but that's the way they have made this thing work. They've gone in and hired the former head of the National Transportation Board. They've hired the number three guy from the FBI. They hired the chief lobbyist for the FBI.
Yeah.
They've hired Coast Guard admirals to represent them. And Rockefeller has clearly figured it out.
Yeah.
A year ago, they knew that the non-reporting of alleged crimes was a problem. So at that hearing, they said, we're going to make this available to the public. We're going to publicize all the alleged crimes that we report to the FBI. Well, first of all, if you rob somebody for less than $10,000, it's not reportable. So if you're a robber and you rob for less than $10,000, it's not a reportable crime. If women are groped, it's not a reportable crime. But anyway, how did that come out? Well, number one, I challenge anybody to even find the data they're putting out. Well, let's take Carnival Corporation.
Okay.
They lumped four cruise lines together, Carnival Cruise Lines and three other Princess Cruise Lines and two other cruise lines.
Yeah, spinoff.
Yeah, they put them into one combined number. So, number one, it is impossible to determine the alleged crimes for, let's say, Carnival Cruise Lines because it's blended into a whole another number.
Mm.
Well, we were able to get in June, which we sent off to the committee, under a Freedom of Information Act request. Took me a year and a half to get this stuff out of the FBI. But we got all the alleged crimes that had been reported, and I'm not convinced all of them were reported, but there was like 570 alleged crimes for the industry that year. You know how many were reported in the public information?
By the industries?
Yeah, 100.
Wow.
100 out of 570 crimes. But what Carnival Corporation did, by putting all of their numbers together, and we were able to separate Carnival Cruise Lines from the 43 that they reported, Carnival Cruise Lines was 95% of the total.
Oh, wow.
So that they've literally hid that. So a person cannot determine which cruise line, even within Carnival, is the safety.
Jesus.
But they took and hid those numbers, clearly not what they said they were going to do a year ago. Well, anyway, moving along, we were able to get that information, which was extremely helpful.
Yeah, that's
we think.
Yeah.
You
should have that readily available on your site somewhere. I'd be interested in looking at that data.
Yeah, well, we are getting that up.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But in 2012,
mm-hmm.
of the hundreds of crimes that occurred on cruise ships, you know how many files the FBI opened?
No idea, brother. That's a small amount.
18.
Jesus.
And there was only 4 convictions. So what that says, if you want to do a crime...
Do it on a cruise ship.
Do it on a cruise ship. So anyway, you know, Rockefeller is, really a dedicated guy.
Yeah, like I said, I became a fan from watching this hearing. Now, I have two questions here, actually. First, they're completely separate, so let me start with what I think is the easier one for us to tackle, and that is, have they ever looked at possibly changing the laws to deal with the issue that these ships, like they say they're from the Bahamas or whatever, is there any way to like get around that by saying if the ship leaves from America, it has to be, shored in America or, adopted by America or however you want to say it?
Well, the answer is... That was the intention of the last bill passed in 2010.
Okay.
That even though it's registered in the Bahamas, if it leaves a U.S. port or comes into a U.S. port, they've got to comply with the law that we write here. Otherwise, they're not allowed to come in.
Right.
So the answer is that was the intent last time. That is the intent this time. And the cruise lines don't want that.
Yeah. Clearly,
but,
yeah.
But they want to be under the control of the Bahamas.
Yeah, they're all going to start leaving from Canada all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, Canada's probably all right. The Bahamas and Panama are a joke.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And the second question was, I understand all this. I guess I'm going to take sort of a devil's advocate point of view and just ask why
sure. There
wasn't any representation of the cruise lines at the hearing last week. Was that because they'd already done their dog and pony show in March and this was kind of a response? Or, what's the story behind all that?
Yeah, the National Transportation Board was entirely separate.
Mm.
And that had nothing to do. The Rockefellers held 2 hearings with the cruise line representatives there last year and the year before. And he's really came to the conclusion that he's given up on them because they say all things are going to be better and we're doing all this stuff. He's come to the conclusion they're not going to do anything.
Yeah, right.
And if you notice that hearing, it was only for ICB victims and a couple other victims.
Right.
I mean, the cruise lines were excluded from a Senate hearing on cruise ship safety because they'd already had 2.
Yeah.
And they make the promises, but they don't want to agree to anything.
Okay, so it's just kind of like, why bother even? This guy doesn't even give him the time of day. He doesn't trust him anymore. I mean, I agree. What did they say after the hearing this last week? What was their response to all this?
The cruise lines?
Yeah.
Well, they put out a couple articles and say, we don't want to be regulated and more regulation and that type of response. And there really is no problem on cruise ships. Well, if there's no problem on cruise ships, then let's pass the law. that just makes this stuff available to the public.
Hmm.
I mean, if things are great, then there's no reason not to. And let me give an example, Tim. If you go to a resort here in the United States and somebody rapes your wife, and you call the police, that becomes a record. In your home, if somebody robs you and you call the police, that becomes a public record. Now, they don't necessarily put your name with it, but it means that you can then identify by zip code, by location,
mm-hmm.
the alleged crimes that are happening. The cruise ships do not want to do that. They don't want the information public. They don't want to be like a motel in their resort in the United States. And can you imagine, Tim, if somebody came with a business plan and said, gee, I want to build this new resort in Phoenix, Arizona, and by the way, when you get in, we're going to lock the doors. There'll be no police. We're going to serve unlimited drinks. And if crime occurs, tough luck. Well, they'd laugh at them for
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
They would absolutely laugh at them for that. And yet that's exactly what's happening on the cruise ships. They've had it their way for so long that the last thing they want to do, and I stress to your audience, go to the last 15 minutes if you don't want to listen to the whole hour and a half of the testimony, and just listen to what Rockefeller says. He says, why wouldn't they want to do the right thing?
Yeah.
I mean, he went on for 15 minutes on that. You're making money.
Mm.
You gotta go in business. Why wouldn't you want to do the right thing
yeah.
for the passengers?
Yeah. I think at one point he used the word mystified. He was he found it absolutely baffling that they are stonewalling these laws. It just makes them look even worse. You know?
Yeah, absolutely, Tim.
Yeah, it doesn't really make any sense. Hillbilly wants to know, it's a guy in the chat room here, he says, how much money are these cruise lines making? I think that's important for folks to know, just how massive this whole thing is.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, Tim. They've made billions of dollars. And along with that, Tim, they used the services, they came up in the hearing last year, of 21 government agencies. They couldn't operate without 21 government agencies. The Coast Guard, you know, the FBI, all kinds of agencies.
Right.
And guess what they pay in taxes?
Zero, probably.
About 1%.
Okay.
basically, they figured out a way to put their corporation in another country, pay no taxes. Then they put their ships in third world countries where no regulations are enforced.
Well, it's interesting, too, that you point that this comes up because, in a way, the bill you guys are working on here, let me get it up here so I don't botch it, the Cruise Passenger Protection Act, again, to go back to the mystifying nature of all this, you would think that they would want to get behind that because you're not talking about taxing them, really. You're not talking about they're still getting away with robbing the American people of money and not being a contributing part of this whole society that they're also benefiting from. So you'd think that the very least they could do would be to protect these folks.
Well, the hearing, the bill, he's introduced another bill about maybe they ought to pay some taxes.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
And you know what their excuse is? It says, well, we bring tourists to Miami, let's say.
Yeah.
Well.
For what, a day before they leave? On the cruise?
Well, whatever. You know, and so U.S. Air is based in Phoenix. It's now become part of American Airlines. They fly tons of tourists into Phoenix or New York or wherever. So they can't use – the airline can't say, well, gee, we bring people to your city that might spend money, so we don't want to be regulated. We don't want to pay taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an argument that just absolutely – makes no sense, you know, but the not paying of taxes and then the failure to disclose. And let me tell you, if you go on our website, there's a link to cruisejunkie.com. I think there's been, 15 people have gone overboard this year, just disappeared off cruise ships. Well, we've done Freedom of Information Act requests on what the Coast Guard spends they go out and look for them.
Mm-hmm.
They'll spend anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million looking for these people, and they never find them.
Oh, God, it's even worse.
Well, but what's even worse, Tim, is that the original bill that we passed, it says that ships have to install a man overboard system.
Right, if I remember you talking about this, yeah.
Yeah, if they're available. So the Coast Guard asked for requests. They got proposals for man overboard systems. Well, here we are 4 years later. They never contacted the companies that gave those proposals. I don't know why they asked for it. Guess what I got under a Freedom of Information Act request 6 weeks ago? Guess who they went to?
The cruise industry?
Yes.
Oh, God, I hate to laugh.
The very person that's to be regulated, and I was able to get that correspondence out of the Coast Guard.
Oh, my God. So they actually probably, in a way, actually financially benefited off this in a sick way, too, because they, you know, the government probably paid them to come up with the proposals, and they never used them.
It wasn't a proposal. It was just criticism. I mean, the companies, legitimate companies, gave proposals for these systems.
Yeah.
And so there have been, since that law passed, 76 people have disappeared. And there are systems available. The law says if there's a system available, you got to put it on the ship. And yet they failed to do that, and the Coast Guard has failed to enforce it. And that, I find that unforgivable. We're now 4 years, or well, 2010, yeah, 4 years past the time the bill is passed, and here they're doing something with it. They're doing nothing with it. And a year ago, Tim, I went into Washington for the hearing last July,
mm-hmm.
and the Coast Guard just signed the guy to me, and I told him he lost the lottery, he got me. So anyway, we went out to dinner. Yeah, we're trying to be nice. And I said, well, gee, how are you coming on the man overboard system? You know, you haven't contacted the company. He says, oh, Ken, he says, we got to do a cost-benefit analysis. That'll take us years to do.
Yeah.
And they already had 4 years. And then when we get done, then the cruise lines will have to do a cost-benefit analysis. Well, one of the companies has offered to put these systems on the Coast Guard ships for free.
Oh, wow.
And they're not doing it. You know, it's very, very disturbing, but we keep going because I don't know if you know me, Tim, but we are determined. You know,
I mean, I'd like to think I get to know you pretty well over the last couple of years, and I'll be honest with you, Ken. We talk about a lot of wacky stuff on this show, but one of the proudest sort of topics that I've championed is your work here in the ICV and trying to get the word out about this. It's absolutely. I don't even know. It just ever since I talked to you the first time, it's been something. I'll be sitting at a bar. If you laugh at me about what I do, I start talking about my show, and then they're like, well, what episode do you really think I should check out if I get a chance? And yours is one of the first ones I mention. I'm like, if you're not into this weird stuff, go listen to Ken Carver, because that stuff is real. It is as real gets, and it is terrifying, and it should make your blood boil if you're a decent human being. And I like to think most of the listeners are. I like to think most people are. I mean, you need to get the word out about this. Now,
well, you operate in the assumption that people are going to do the right thing until you find out they're not. But Tim, I want to talk about some things that I have not talked about.
Okay, well, let me ask you about something first that you have not talked about on the show before that was talked about in the hearing that I want to know more about. Senator Rockefeller talked about the ticket problem, and then later it came up about something involving a sticker with the ticket. Sounded like you had to sign something, and then you could look at the regulations that were, at the rules and regulations that were part of the cruise ship. It was sort of like a nefarious little trick that the cruise ship industry has going on. But I only really sort of heard them allude to it and talk about it a little bit towards the end of the hearing. I wanted to ask you about it because I'm sure you're well-versed in this issue. So what's the ticket problem?
The ticket problem is if you go on our homepage,
mm-hmm.
you can click on the Carnival Cruise Line ticket. And you would have to be a maritime lawyer to understand it. But the passenger has to agree to this fine print before he can get his ticket. But it came up in the hearing. You'd have to hire a maritime lawyer to realize you're giving up all your rights.
Yeah.
By paying that ticket, but you got to check it off. Yeah, I understand it. Well, Rockefeller's trying to say we need clear language so people really know that number one, the medical care, the doctor doesn't work for them; he works for himself. So when a medical problem happens, you got to sue the doctor. Well, he probably has nothing. The cruise lines make money off all the stuff the medical department sells, pills and stuff like that. So they're making money off of it, and yet they exclude themselves from liability. They say at one point in the ticket something to the effect, "We don't promise you a safe cruise."
My God.
You know,
yeah.
And
it's written in 5-point font. So no one,
yeah,
no one ever reads.
Well, you can actually look at a ticket that they use,
mm-hmm.
and so people don't know that they're giving up their rights when they buy that cruise line ticket. They're literally giving up their rights as a U.S. citizen when they step on that boat, and they're now become a citizen of Panama, regulated by Panama. And Panama will do nothing if anything happens. Or the Bahamas will do nothing. If you're raped, forget it. They're not going to do anything. And yet you're technically on their territory. So, I mean, the ticket, it's a pretty simple thing. Give people, let them know what they're giving up in language they can understand.
Right.
Yeah,
just be like, if you're going on this cruise, realize that you're bound by the laws of Jamaica and not United States,
as I said, I was CEO of an insurance company. We had to have language that people could understand that was required by us. No, that's a fair requirement.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be a lawyer to figure out what it is and what it isn't. But people do not realize when they check off the box that they, we agree to this because I want to take my cruise, don't realize what they're giving up as far as rights are concerned when they step on that cruise ship.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's devious, frankly.
Yeah, exactly. It is shady, to use the parlance of our times. Now, what was the – you said you wanted to talk about some stuff that you haven't talked about. So, lay it on me, man. I want to hear this. What's on your mind?
Yeah, your show is kind of a paranoia show.
Paranormal, yeah, and paranoia.
Yeah, paranormal.
Yeah. Yeah. We cater to the strange and unusual, for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you some of the things that have been at play in this for me. It says that there is a force that is helping us move forward,
mm-hmm.
beyond me. And it starts off at the beginning. We didn't go public with Marion's story for 14 months. Well, a story that's 14 months old, Tim, it's an old story, So I knew one guy in New York who'd worked for CNN, and I'd call his wife. We were friends, and said to you, we got, this story about our daughter, and he called me back, and he was doing a project with Anderson Cooper on Katrina. And he called me up and said, "Hey, Ken, we got lots of stuff going on." And, really just a nice sign-off. So I said, fine. So anyway, we got in contact with a guy in New York who was a PR guy who really felt we needed to take the story public. There were others that felt we shouldn't take it public. It's a rough thing to make a decision to go public with a very emotional story.
Mm. Yeah.
So anyway, we finally, in October of 2005, had a conference call with a guy in New York and another guy here in Phoenix. And the guy in Phoenix said, "Forget it, Ken." The guy in New York said, "I'll try and write an article and get it into the Boston Globe on Marion," because Marion was from Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
That was like 10 in the morning. Well, at noon, my friend calls me from CNN, and I hadn't talked to him for 2 months. He said, "Ken, I'm going to fly out, and we're going to put you on what turned out to be the first Anderson Cooper show." Now, you couldn't plan that, Tim. You could not set that up.
Right.
But then he went a step further. About a month later, called me and said, Ken, he said, I think you ought to call Chris Shea, Representative Chris Shea, who was a congressman who had gotten some interest into this. So I did, and that put us into the first congressional hearing. Well, the first Anderson Cooper show took Marion's story viral, and it's still being told, Tim. Yeah,
absolutely.
And you couldn't plan that on an old story. Well, that's one of the things that happened along the way. Later on, in 2006, we got a call from the Cambridge police, and they wanted me to said some guy had contacted them about trying to get a hold of us. So I called the guy, and he was in Canada, and he'd been on Marion's ship.
Oh, wow.
And he had gone to Senator McCain, he'd gone to Anderson Cooper, and then he went to the Cambridge police to get a hold of me. And they made the connection. So anyway, I called him, and he gave me the story that the story among the crew members on Marion was that one of the crew members was involved. It was a story that went through all the crew members. And then he gave us the name of several other crew members who confirmed that story about the crew member. Well, so what do you do with that? Well, we went to the FBI, and they did nothing, even though we had the names of these people.
Oh, God.
And about a month later, the phone rings at some woman from Seattle, Washington, who calls and said, I have been in contact with your daughter in the next world. And this woman was a well-respected woman who we were able to connect to a neighbor in Darien, Connecticut. And she told us in great detail what had happened to Marion and the nationality of the person and how they disposed of the body. And it was a crew member. Story similar to what the crew member, except this took it even a step further.
Yeah, I saw that in detail. So she knew things that presumably only really you would know.
Yeah.
About the case.
And she didn't know that crew members had contacted us.
Yeah.
So another 3 years goes by, I guess. I don't know how many years. And we go to a liberal Methodist church in Paradise Valley. And the minister came up to me and he said, do you want to know what happened to Marion? And I said, sure.
That's kind of a strange thing to say, yeah.
So he said, well, there's a woman in our church that I'm absolutely convinced has the power and knows what happened to Marion. And she'd conveyed it to him. So I said, well, we'll set up a meeting. So we did. Guess what, Tim? She told us exactly the same story.
Oh, wow.
Of what had happened to Marion. And I sent you a church statue that we put in place for Marion.
Yes.
And that statue, we had a service for Marion like 6 months after she disappeared, or maybe it was 8 months, because we didn't know what had happened. And we spent months investigating, but we finally said we'll have a service of remembrance. So anyway, there were hundreds of people that came, and people donated money. And so we had, I don't know, a few thousand dollars, and Carol and I decided, well, what do we want to do for Marion? So we, after working through different possibilities, went up and visited a friend in Prescott who introduced us to an artist. And he said, you got to talk to my friend, Bob Schilling. So we, Marion had written a lot of poetry, and I sent you the link to that music, Tim.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And one of the songs was The Butterfly. So he listened to that music and came up with a drawing of a woman sitting on a rock holding this butterfly. So we made the decision to go ahead and have this bronze statue made in Marion's behalf. Well, it took him a year to make it, and it sits on a rock, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought the rock down a month before the statue, put it in place, you know, in this garden. Well, Tim, this thing had to be hoisted. It was a large rock. You saw the picture of it.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite
and put into place. Well, Tim, the moment that rock hit the ground, Congress passed the first bill.
Oh, wow. That's pretty, wow. That's the timing is impeccable, as they say.
Yeah, well, so anyway, and I don't think we could have gone as far as we've gone with a group of volunteers without some force helping us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you guys are doing the right thing. That's you know, you said earlier you count on people doing the right thing, but I think if you do the right thing and you know, you're really pushing for a good cause, I think the forces of the universe are behind you. And I think there's also a lot of people on the other side who are behind you, you know.
Yeah,
you're fighting for these people who have absolutely no voice.
Well, in the hearing last week, Tim, for the Senate Commerce Committee to hold a committee hearing just for ICB.
Mm.
I mean, that is a miracle.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, that is a miracle because the cruise lines, they've always been at these hearings saying, oh, we're good guys and we're going to do the right thing. But for them to get to the point that they're holding a hearing just for ICB members and victims and excluding the cruise lines, that is a miracle.
Hmm.
So anyway, those are some issues I haven't really talked about in the past, but I really think there is a force at work in what we're doing to correct things that should not be happening to people.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, I think the more you are open to that, the more you'll see strange sort of synchronicities pop up as time goes on. I think I'm really, like I said, I think it's such a pure cause, too. I mean, you guys are really fighting for, as the name says right there in the thing, victims. And as I said before, victims who can't speak for themselves. So it's really, really yeoman's work, as they say. Now, in the interim, since last time we talked to you, I thought this was kind of interesting because it was funny. It's, in a way, it is kind of a synchronicity somewhat because I got turned on to all this from talking to you. And we talked in October. August. Almost 2 years. August 22nd, 2012 was when we taped that first conversation. And the ensuing time since then, there's been some really high-profile cruise incidents. This thing, Kim Ware was the person on the panel who talked about being stranded on the ship for 4 days. That was like in February of 2013, so about 6 months after we talked. And that was something that never came up when we talked. I don't know if that was something that had happened before and was kind of kept, you know, hadn't gotten the major publicity it had that this one did, or enlighten me a little bit to that whole situation.
Well,
that was a major, major story.
Yeah, that was a major story, but that was not the first time it had happened.
Hmm.
The Splendor, a Carnival cruise ship, in December of, I think, 2012, I think it's after we talked, caught fire off the coast of Mexico.
Oh, wow.
And was adrift for 5 days. It's the same story as the Triumph.
Mm.
Caught fire, and the Coast Guard had to go out and pull it back to the States, spending millions of dollars, taxpayer money, to bring this ship back. But it already happened.
Mm.
And in both cases, those ships, in theory, had been inspected, saying they're safe. And in both cases, they weren't safe. The Triumph, they were in non-compliance with the IMO regulations, SOLAS regulations, for a year, and nobody did anything. And eventually the thing caught fire. And you know, Tim, then last fall, a Royal Caribbean ship caught fire, burned the back of the ship off.
Right.
And I talked to an important person in London this week who's involved in the maritime industry. And he indicated to me, Tim, this will happen again. The ships are not safe. They should be two-hull ships. And you know, at the National Transportation Safety Board, they came up with what they're doing for safety. You know what the key thing is, Tim?
What's that?
The ship is your lifeboat. In other words, because they know they can't get 8,000 people off a ship, so that's your lifeboat. Well, let's take a look. The Costa Concordia, Tim, sank. Well, they waited an hour before they did anything, and then it was too late.
Right.
To get the people. This ferry boat in Japan, they waited an hour.
Hmm.
And then 300 people died. I mean, that just happened a few months ago. The New York Times had a front page article on that. I think it was Sunday. And the whole corporation was corruption on that ferry boat.
Yeah. Do you think those cases, not only the, well, clearly, I mean, the one that got stranded, the Triumph, that clearly made an impact because Kim Ware was on the panel and you know, it made a major, became a major, major news story. Has that sort of raised more awareness for what you guys are doing? Well, I mean,
yeah, I tell you, Tim, every time something happens,
yeah,
the phones ring off the hook. Absolutely. Every time, you know, Costa Concordia sinks, you know, another ship catches fire, you know, the stories just go on and on and on, and that continues to bring more and more people to ICV.
Mm.
It's amazing how worldwide we are now. A year and a half ago, there's a organization in Europe called Victim Support of the EU.
Mm-hmm.
That is the umbrella organization for all the victims groups in Europe, 28 countries.
Right, right. I remember you saying they had taken an interest in your work.
Yeah, well, they made us a member. We are the only member outside of Europe of Victim Support of Europe. So they had me speak at their annual meeting in May of a year ago in Edinburgh. So here's the representatives of 28 countries. And, you know, they're now supporting our efforts. In Australia, a year ago February, I testified at a government hearing. We actually have a separate chapter there. So, I mean, we have become the voice that I'm sure the cruise lines wish we'd go away. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but you can't put something back in the box. And they don't, instead of just doing the right thing.
Yeah, you guys will go away when they do the right thing. You know,
yeah.
As simple as that. If they want you guys to go away, they should just comply with the basic requirements of human decency. That's all we're asking here.
No, absolutely. I mean, just do the right thing. And it's not, you know, and what is the right thing? The right thing is all crimes are reported. The last bill, one of the provisions was a victim on a ship has the right to go directly on a hotline to the FBI. Nobody knows that when they're on a ship and they're raped or robbed or whatever. If they just, you know, that doesn't cost the cruise lines anything.
Yeah.
The problem with the cruise lines is a third to half the crimes are committed by crew members. And guess what, Tim? A third of the sexual crimes are on minors. And Rockefeller's trying, that is part of his bill, that number be pulled out separately. A third of the crimes are on minors, sexual crimes. And the cruise lines are going crazy over making that information public.
Yeah, well, I can imagine that would crush their family, you know, their family demographic. So.
Well, but people need to know these things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not taking. Trust me, Ken. I'm not on their side.
No. I understand. So yeah. Why wouldn't you do it? I mean, just it's not going to affect business. If people knew that if something happened, they're going to be protected by the law, that would make them. They'd make better customers. But I think one of the things we've accomplished is that more and more people are. I did a show Sunday night,
mm-hmm.
and some woman called up, and she said, gee, I got two teenage daughters. I was going to take them on a cruise. She says, I don't think I'm going to do it now. If they knew that there was protection, and here you've got a city. A cruise ship is a city. It's got cooks and waiters and entertainers and people, and the mayor of the city is the captain. You know what they're missing, Tim?
Police.
The police.
And medical, and really quality medical care. I think, I want to say one of the senators on the hearing said they have something like two medical people for the whole ship or something crazy like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're lucky. And a lot of times they only work part of the day.
Right, right.
And in the case of Amanda, the medical stuff was all stored, closed up. You know, it's just...
Yeah, the emergency room was closed. Think about that, folks. There's 8,000 sometimes people on these ships, and the emergency room is closed. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the equipment's locked in the closet. They have to turn the lights on, plug it in.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You know, can you imagine going into a hospital emergency ward and your spouse has just had a heart attack and everything's locked up and there's no doctors around? Well, it would be like the Veterans Administration. It would make the news, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, in the case of a man, it did make the news. But there's so many stories. That people can see the stories on our website, some of the stories. But that's what our website is listed, are the stories after stories of people that are willing to go public. And they can see the horrors that happened to them.
Hmm.
It's a matter, but I think the public is more aware of it today, Tim, than they were when we did the interview 2 years ago, and clearly when we started in 2006. There's awareness among the public that cruise ships are not safe, they're not protected, and I think it's had an effect on them.
Hey, I read something today. The Cruise Victims Association reports that 165 people have disappeared while at sea since 1995.
Wow. You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Okay, there's a reason right there never to take a cruise, okay? Just the fact that there is a Cruise Victims Association. Okay, that should be a red flag right there. Yeah.